This is Cheryl McQuaid with the Lansing Fisher Body Historical Team. We're at the Greenhouse. It's January 23rd, 2006, approximately 9:30 a.m. We're preparing to interview Denny and Maggie Cox. First, let's announce the rest of the team.
John Fedewa.
Jerry Smith.
Marilyn Coulter.
Denny, let's start with you. Could you state your name and spell your last name?
Dennis Cox. Last name is C-O-X.
And Maggie?
Given name is Margaret, but I'm known as Maggie Cox, C-O-X.
And we're going to start with Denny, which I know your name is Dennis, and I've always called you Denny.
I go by Denny.
Could you tell us what your address is, please?
15595 Park Lake Road, East Lansing, Michigan. 48823.
And you're both married. Do you have children?
We have two children.
Denny, where were you born?
Lansing, Michigan.
In what side of Lansing?
The Sparrow Hospital, which would be on the northeast side.
And could you give me a little bit about your educational background?
I graduated from Bath High School in 1963. Other than that, I didn't go to college or anything like that.
Were you in the military?
No, I was not.
What did your parents do?
My dad, by trade, was a welder, and my mom worked at a place called Michigan Press, which she read papers.
And did you know about Fisher Body before you came to the plant to put in an application?
As a matter of fact, I did a little bit because I had a uncle who worked at the plant, and with his help is how I got into the plant.
So So you did apply at the plant?
Yes.
It wasn't at, like, Michigan Employment?
No. At that time, we just came right straight to the plant and put our applications in at the plant.
Was there a big hiring?
Back in them days, you could hire in Fisher Body today, quit it, go to Oldsmobile the next day, quit Oldsmobile, and come back to Fisher Body the next day.
And what is your seniority day?
October of 1963.
Okay. Why did you hire into Fisher Body?
Probably the reason most people did, they needed a job. I was married. We got married right out of high school. And I worked at Demmer Tool and Die when we got married. Actually, I worked at a cleaning service when we were going together in high school. And right after I graduated, I went to Demmer Tool and Die. And that looked like it was kind of like a dead-end job, so I left there and went to Fisher Body. And everybody at Demmer told me, says, don't go to Fisher Body, don't go to Oldsmobile, because every year you're going to get laid off for changeovers. Well, I loved it.
What is a changeover?
Changeover was when they went from one year, model year, to the next. They would take the cars that was, I would say, like a 63, and then went from 63 to 4, 64. They brought in the new models.
So, Marilyn Coulter.
Denny, you said that you grew up here in Lansing. What was it like growing up in a factory town?
Actually, I grew up in East Lansing, which basically my area that I grew up in is out of Lansing. It was considered at that time being living in the country.
So what did people think about factory working back then?
Actually, back then, I don't really think that it was it wasn't a bad thing to work at a factory. It was a good thing to work at a factory because it was a steady income. Other than the fact that, like I say, when I worked at Demmer, them guys over there said, you don't want to go over there, you're going to get laid off every year. Well, laid off every year was like 2 weeks to 3 weeks at a time, you know. Then you went right back to work and you started the next model run.
So being laid off was not a problem for you?
No. In fact, it was like a vacation.
Do you remember the first day you walked, once you got hired, that you walked into those doors? What were your thoughts?
Man, when I walked into that plant, and I got up on the second floor, all I could see, as far as you could see, was nothing but a roll of lights. It was just one light, fluorescent light after another. And I'm thinking, oh, does it come to an end down there somewhere or not? You know, it was so long, you know, I'm thinking, wow, what did I get myself into? Because when I come from Demmer, you could see from one side of the plant to the other. Well, when you got into Fisherbody, you didn't know. In fact, when I got up to where they took me, I didn't have a clue where I was at. And all I'm thinking is, how am I going to get out of here? And once I get out of here, how am I going to find this place tomorrow? You know, I mean, it was just like, it was just one row of lights after another, and as far as you could see, and it was just unreal.
And on that first day, where did they take you?
Trim.
Trim?
Yep. I went on the day shift, and I believe that they brought everybody in on days at that time and broke them in on a job for like 2 weeks. And then after that 2 weeks, I got shipped to nights. I don't remember having a steady job. The job that I did was I was an absentee replacement person. In other words, what I did was, my supervisor had 25 jobs. My responsibility was to learn all 25 of them jobs. And I loved that because I never liked being stuck on one job day after day after day. So every day that I went in, I knew what job I was going to go to, which that was great for me because I didn't like being stuck on one job. And then after a few years of that, then I went and I was a I took people's jobs. I was the relief man. Yes, I was a relief man for a lot of years. And then after I left the relief man job, I went to a repairman. And I liked that too because even though that was a steady job of doing repair, it was always something different that you had to repair and had to look for because you never knew what was coming down the line at you that you had to repair.
Let's take a pause.
When I was on repair for quite a few years at Fisherbody. Occasionally, we would go over to Oldsmobile and repair some of the work that left our plant that wasn't done. That was quite a lot of overtime on that job. When I left that job, I went to alternate committee man. Then from alternate committee man, I went to full-time committee man. And from committee man, I went to job placement coordinator.
Denny, Marilyn Coulter, I just have one question. You said when you were doing repair, you did quite a lot of overtime. What's quite a lot? 9 hours, 10 hours? How many hours did you probably put in as a repair person?
when we was on the repair, if we went over to Oldsmobile, we was working 10, 12, 14 hours a day. Saturdays, Sundays, it was a lot. There was a lot of overtime and a lot of repair that had to get done. And with the amount of people that we had doing repair, we didn't have a lot of people. I mean, we're talking maybe 6 or 8 people that was doing the repair work. Yeah, it was a lot of overtime, which was good because the paycheck was good. And but anyhow, from the repair, I went to the 2 committee jobs, and then I went from committee to job placement coordinator, which that job was the last job that I'd done while I was in the plant. That was a union appointed position, and I had an office with a management person, and our job was to try and get the people who was out on workers' comp back to work, find them a job so that they had a steady income.
So, when would you say, Maryland Culture, when did you get involved with UU?
I can tell you why I got involved with the union.
Let's start with the why.
Okay. The reason why I got involved with the union was because at the time, our committee men was very hard to find. You couldn't find them. If you put in a call, sometimes it took you maybe 2-3 days before you got your call answered. At that point, I decided that I'm going to get involved, and people are not going to have to look for me. They're going to see me because I'm going to go to the floor 2-3 times a day, walk from one end of my department to the other every single day, at least 3 times. That way, not only did the people see me, but they couldn't complain because I wasn't available. Also, because of the way that I did it, I knew what was going on before anything got out of control.
Cheryl McQuaid, Denny, what shift did you hire into, and what shift did you spend most of your time on?
I hired in on the day shift and was trained for 2 weeks, and then put right straight to nights at that point. I worked nights for, I believe, 11 years. And at that time, I bumped back to days, and when I say bumped back to days, I found someone on a day shift that had less seniority than I did, so I was able to go from the night shift to the day shift. I was real lucky in that aspect because once I hit the day shift, I never got bumped back to nights.
Maggie, I'm sorry, but what was it like being married to a man on the second shift putting in all those hours? What was it like for the family?
Very difficult. Our daughters, we have 2 daughters. They were 15 months apart, and it was, they would be in bed by the time, you know, they'd be in bed, Daddy was at work. Then during the daytime, we had to spend time outside a lot so that he got his sleep. He didn't get to participate in a lot of the activities that went on at the school when the girls were in grade school, their Christmas programs, any of their sports or anything like that. But he did make up for it after he got on days.
I remember when I was on nights, the only part that I liked about it was I didn't have to get up in the morning. But, and on the other side of that coin was, I would get up long enough to eat my dinner, get in the vehicle, go to work. Come home, go to bed, sleep, half hour before it was time to leave to go to work again. There was a lot of sleeping, and I think probably a lot of that was a lot of the overtime. The other thing that was hired on me being inside. I'm an outdoors person, and being inside the plant for 9-10 hours a day, not knowing what the weather's doing outside, not knowing, you know, basically not knowing what's going on outside. It was difficult being what I could, I always use the term locked inside, you know. But, I didn't like nights. I did not like nights at all, but I couldn't get on days because I didn't have enough seniority to get on days. Like I said, I was very lucky that once I got on days, I was able to maintain and stay on days.
Could you tell us a little bit, when you first hired in, what the plant was like as far as both lines were on the same floor, when that changed, some of the changes when you first came in there?
Our line was on the outside. When I say on the outside, we had the, our line was on the, that ran around the outside of the walls. The that's the B line. The A line ran on the inside. I always figured we was more fortunate being on the B line because at that time, Verlinden Avenue had windows, and you could go over to the windows and look out the windows. Or while you was working right there, you could look out the windows. Well, after a few years, they boxed them windows up. They closed them right up, and you couldn't see out at all. And that refers back to what I was talking about. Was you didn't know what was going on outside. You know, somebody come up with this idea that if you can see a green wall, you're a lot better off not knowing what's going on outside. Well, I disagreed with that right away because, you know, you want to know what's going on outside. You know, I guess what the thing is, what you can't see, you really want to know what you can't see. You know, and the difference in the two lines... That was always something that stuck in my mind. Was I was real, real glad that I never had to work on the A line. The reason why I was that I felt that way was mainly because of the supervisors that was on the A line. I didn't know them real well, but the ones that I did see the way they reacted and stuff like that, I was thankful that I wasn't working over there because there was a few of them that was in a higher status bracket that probably that if I worked on the A-line, I probably wouldn't have been still, I wouldn't have made my 30 years. You know, that it was just, it was unreal the way that the two departments, the A line and the B line, I use the, you know, the departments, the run crawl departments. It was just so much difference between day and night, the way the two groups ran their own line. You know, the line that I was on, we knew everybody from the higher ups right on down. They would come down our line and they would talk to us. They didn't, you know, if you went by and said, hey, they answered you back. The A-line guys or what was over there, it was like they didn't acknowledge their people. You know, and I always wondered why. You know, it was always, to me, it wasn't right to be treated that way. And I said I'm very fortunate that I was able to stay on the B-line because I don't think I'd have made it otherwise.
Did you find it very strange to have such a difference in supervisory management practices within the same walls just because of different lines? Did you ever find out why?
I never really did find out why. I did have to, in later years, when I worked as a committee man, and more so when I went to the job of... placement coordinator, That was the last job I was on, was a placement coordinator job. And at that point in time, a few of the older higher-ups had moved on. And things went back in what my opinion was would have been more normal people to work for or work with. There was just a few people, the superintendents, I think they were superintendents, that really pushed the fact that do not mingle with your workers. I had a different view of that. My view was that my supervisor put his pants on the same way I did. You know, and I had no problem. I used to run around with, before I went on committee, I used to run around with a few supervisors on the outside. And when I went on committee, I was told that I could not associate with these supervisors on the outside. And I said, well, here's the deal. You're not going to tell me what I'm going to do on the outside. They were told, supervisors were told point blank, that they could not associate with the workers on the outside. Well, we did it anyhow. At one point in time, while I was on committee, I went out west with a supervisor. Or basically, he went out west with me. I didn't drive him. It was my vehicle, and he rode it. He wanted to go, and I said, I don't have no problem with it, but I'm going to tell you point blank, we are not going to discuss work. Work, if you mention work, you're going to be walking back from Wyoming, because I'm not going to discuss work. It has nothing to do with being on the outside. Well, I took a pretty good gamble on that, because a lot of people in the union position guys told me that you'll never win your election if you go out west with a supervisor. I said, as far as I'm concerned, it has nothing to do with my ability, how I do my job, or whatever. So I was a little concerned about that when I got back, and I don't recall anyone that I represented that had a problem with the fact that I went out west with a supervisor. Shortly after that, there was an election. I had an election. And I had one person run against me. And, you know, and you always wonder, what's it going to be like? You know, you always wonder, well, am I going to win again, or am I not going to win again, or whatever. And due to the fact, like I say, I just got back from being out west with a supervisor. Anyhow, as it turned out, this other person got 2 votes. So I went to the guys that was on committee at that point in time, and I said, here's the results of my election. And you guys told me that I wouldn't win again. I says, I don't feel that the committee job is a popularity contest or anything like that. I said, the bottom line is you need to have your people see you. I can tell you committee men that sat in that committee office and never left that office unless they had a call. And they didn't know their people. You can't know your people. You know, I mean, I don't know if I was an exceptional type person not being on committee or whatever, but I just felt that my job, I was elected by the people, I need to be seen by the people. The A-line committee men, I felt they had a harder job because of the fact that they had to deal with the type of supervisors that was on that A-line. We had a couple of supervisors that on our line also that should have been on the A-line.
Do you have any memories of those supervisors? Can you tell us a little bit about the the type of supervisor that should have been on the A line that you didn't want on the B line?
The type of supervisors that I'm talking about is that no matter what, they was always looking to keep things stirred up in their department. They did not want a smooth running department. They wanted their department to be in a total turmoil on a consistent basis, and I never understood that, why they would want that. I went to upper management and they said, that's the kind of supervisor that we like. Well, it's not the kind of supervisor we like to deal with. And don't get me wrong, there were some good supervisors on the A line, but far and few between.
Could you tell us a little bit about what made a good supervisor, and do you have any good memories of some of the better supervisors?
Yes, I do. As a matter of fact, what I considered a good supervisor was one who would sit down with the person who had a problem and try to talk it out with them versus taking the road that I'm right, you're wrong, we're not going to talk about it. I don't know, I had a kind of had a way with words, I guess, that could sometimes turn them around from being that type of a supervisor. We had one individual in particular that no matter what you tried with him, he would not listen no matter what. And that type of supervisor, in my opinion, always, his department always ran rough. I spent a lot of time walking through his department just to antagonize him, let him know that I was there, knowing what was going on, because of the fact of the way that he was.
Do you remember any of the people that you worked by? And did any of them have a influence on your life or do anything for you that would, you'll just never forget them? Or
I remember the one thing that really, really, really sticks in my mind is this guy named, we called him Whitey. He was an older gentleman. And when he retired, him and I used to talk every day. Every day we used to talk. And when he retired, it was like he took a part of me with him when he left. It was a sad day. It was a sad day for me because I'm thinking, wow, I'm not gonna get to talk to, you know, get to talk to Whitey every day like I was, you know. And it was just kind of difficult right there. That's the only one that I really remember. Like I say, when he retired, he took a part of it with me, took a part of me with him. But there was so many people in that plant. I really don't think that anybody affected the way that I was or the way that I turned out. That's a hard question to answer because I still have a lot of friends from the plant. And the two jobs that I was on, especially the last job, I got to know pretty much everybody from one end of the plant to the other. To this day, I can't go anywhere without someone saying, "Hi, Denny." And it's terrible because I cannot remember their names. I know the face. You worked on the A line, or you worked on the B line, or you worked in trim, you worked in paint. That I can do. But to come right out and say what the person's name is, well, I guess I was very fortunate because when I retired, they took up a list on both lines throughout the whole plant. These people signed these my retirement card, which retirement card was about 10 inches wide by about 12 inches high. And I have two of them, and it's just nothing but solid hand names on this card. And I have that up. When you walk in our house, them two cards are right there. I will go home after I see somebody at the mall or somewhere, and I'll go to that card, both of them cards, and I'll start going down. Oh, that was Cheryl that I just seen. You know, and that's really helped me to figure out what some of these people's names are, because, you know, they only had to remember one name. I had to remember 5,000. You know, it was kind of hard. When the A-line, I knew a lot of people from the A-line. When the two lines were together, I knew a lot of them, because we was close enough where we could talk with them, joke with them, and stuff like that. When they took the A-line and moved it downstairs, I didn't like it for the fact that there was a lot of people that I was friends with that was down there, and when you went down to visit them, they would say, hey, you're out of your department, get back to your department. So you lost a few friendships there. I mean, not friendships, but contacts there, because of the fact that they was...
Snap. We're going to snap.
Okay, anyhow, we ended up with... if I seen somebody and couldn't remember what their name was, I would go home and find it on my retirement card.
Denny, do you remember any of the new hire pranks or initiations or just some of the stuff that would happen on the Florida kind of pastime?
Oh, yes, I do. I can tell you some war stories that you won't believe. I guess one of the biggest things was if we had a new hire that hired in around Thanksgiving or something, we'd always tell him or her to go down to the office and see so-and-so and get your turkey. We'd send them down there to get their turkey. Well, they come back. There wasn't no turkey. And I can remember that we used to tell them, say, hey, go over there and ask John about... His dad's a dancer. And he says, he's a dancer? Yeah. So he'd go over and he'd say, hey, John, he says, I hear your dad's a dancer. John would say with a straight face, he says, you know, he says, I don't think that's very funny. My dad lost a leg in the war. Oh, yeah. We used to post some good ones. I mean, I like to say the turkey, and we'd say, you know, that the... set him up with the guy was, his dad was a piano player, and his dad lost his arm, you know, and stuff like that. And yeah, we just do it so serious that, you know, we, but we had a good time, you know, and new hires, I was one of them, you know, at one time, and the pranks all got pulled on me, but I was all pretty good at pulling them back, so... Oh, yeah, we used to take and sneak up behind somebody and pick them up and throw them in the trunk and throw the key in there with them. pick them up, put them in a barrel. Just different things.
And how would these people get out of the trunk?
Yeah, they could send a key through from underneath. The seats weren't in them yet.
And, oh, okay.
They could, or they could hand it back out by where the taillights went. They could get back out. But we used to have fun with it. I remember some of the times when we had some people that liked to drink in the plant. And I remember one time a supervisor came down there, and one of the guys had a bottle of Boone's Farm wine, and he just happened to get caught taking a drink. The supervisor said, I told you to get rid of it. And the guy said, I'm getting rid of it as fast as I can. Oh, yeah. Those were the days. And I can remember guys would hold the, we'd have a cracked windshield. And they would hold the window open that went along the side of the plant. They would come at that window with that big windshield in their hand. They'd hold the window open. They'd throw that glass right out the window. And we had one that went over the fence, hovered a little bit, and sat right down on the road. And pretty quick, here come plant protection. And we thought, oh boy, that guy's in trouble for throwing that glass out the window. Plant protection pulled up there with their little station wagon, loaded that. It didn't even break the glass. Well, the glass was already cracked. The window was cracked, but the windshield. And it didn't smatter or nothing. It just hovered and sat right down on the road. He stopped, picked it up, put it in the back of his station wagon, and we're thinking, wow. You know. Well, come to find out, what they thought was they thought it fell off of one of the trucks that hauled stuff over to Simon's. So, but, yeah, just, and guys would take bottles, whiskey bottles or whatever, set it on top of the car and let it go down the line. And when it get down, then they'd go around this way and be down there at the supervisor's desk talking. And but when the bottle got down there, they'd say, I told him, guy, not to do any more drinking. He'd go over and take it off the car and throw it in a waste basket. He's the one that put it up there. But, you know, I just, there was a lot of things, there was a lot of things that was done that I didn't agree with. You know, there'd be busted windshields and stuff like that, and we'd have to take a hammer, bust them up smaller so they would go in the gondola, just so that they didn't have to write up that they had 15 busted windshields. And a lot of the windshields got broke in shipping. And I always thought they should have just sent them back and let the company pay for them.
Which they did finally end up doing.
Yeah, oh yeah, finally they ended up doing that. But there was a lot of stuff that was kind of what I figured under the table stuff. But we have... And there was not a lot of guys. I'm going to say... There was a few people, maybe one or two, in each department that didn't want to get along with the rest of the people, deliberately. Them kind of people, you just kind of learned to ignore them. You know, they didn't want to be part of the group. You didn't push them, let them go.
When you were a committee man, Denny, what were some of the problems when people called you? What type of problems would they call you on?
I would get called on pretty near everything. From this person's radio's too loud. This person's got the fan on. I don't want the fan on. You pretty much, if I would get a call from a certain supervisor, our calls came, our calls was called down, excuse me, to the repair area, and so I'd stop and look at the books, and they'd say, okay, supervisor so-and-so has a committee call. Well, I knew before I even got to that area who had to call in. They didn't put the person's name down, but I knew who that person was before I even got to that department. You learn to know who's calling. Probably out of 10 calls, probably two of them was legitimate calls. The rest of them was nitpicking calls because of so-and-so started his relief too early, or he gave this person 5 minutes more than he gave me. It was some of them, you know, it was an experience, and you learn how to deal with it. But there was some calls when you got them in an area that I wish my alternate was on so he could take this call. I'm done with this guy. So that type of stuff. But I tried not to take it home. I'm sure at times I probably did. I would not discuss what had happened at work, but I'm sure by my actions that my wife knew that I didn't have a very good day. I know my wife got real jealous. I had a lady on the night shift opposite me, and she would call every night. Every night she called and would ask me, what do I do about this? What do I do about that? And I would tell her, I said, well, if I was dealing with it, this is what I'd do. Okay. But that happened a lot, being called at home. The legitimate complaints was fairly easy to take care of. Management made a big mistake when they taught me how to analyze the job when it comes to time studies. I spent like 2 days working with one of the time study guys, and he showed me how they time studied the jobs and how they came up with their figures. And I learned that well.
What is time study a job?
Time study is when they take a time time clock and they check you out to see how long it takes you to take this 2-inch bolt to screw it into the door. They time study each aspect of your job. If you put a bolt in the door, you put a seatbelt on the floor, you put a regulator in the door, you put a window in the door, they had a time study of exactly how many seconds, or it had to be seconds, how many seconds it took you to do each portion of your job. I learned that real well, and I had my own stopwatch, and I could time study the job and knew exactly what the time study on that job was supposed to be. So when management would come out with a new time study, I could just tear it apart. And like I said, they made a big mistake when they taught me how to do that. And I had other committee men that would have me come to their areas and show them what, you know, how to time study some car, the jobs and stuff. But it was, I would have to say the experience that I learned from being a committee man, how to deal with each individual. Once you got to know that individual, you could help them out because you knew what they was looking for. You knew what they wanted. Like I said, I spent a lot of time with the people that I represented so that I knew them, you know.
Denny, could you explain a little more about time studying a job? Was that calls that you would get from people? That their job was being time studied?
I would get calls because their job got time studied, but the main thing was that they would say, I've got too much work. I can't keep up with the amount of work that I have. So I would show them exactly, I would tell them, say, yes, you do have too much work. We'll write a grievance and we'll get some work taken off you. Or I would show them, look, this is how long it takes you to do this, and from this point where the car enters your workstation to where this car leaves the workstation before the next car enters your workstation, and you're doing this amount of work, and then also you're over here playing chess, or reading the paper, you know, and I would be blunt with them. I would say, look, I can't do anything for you. I said, if you are telling me you've got too much work, I'm telling you, get rid of the paper. If you can't keep up in a reasonable amount of work, and then I tell them point blank, you don't have a grievance. I know some people didn't want to hear that. I remember the time I wrote a job up, and I told these two guys, because they read the paper constantly, I told them, I said, I'll tell you right now, I says, I'm not going to write this up if you're going to read the paper. We won't read the paper. Fine. I wrote it up. Lloyd Kane was the international rep. At that point in time, we was close to a contract. And so Lloyd Kane came in. We didn't tell these guys that we were coming up, and I didn't know it, that we were going to go up and look at the job. We went up, and when we rounded the corner, both of them was reading the paper. I turned to Lloyd, and before Lloyd could even speak, I said, I'll take care of this one. I walked up to the guys. I had the grievance in my hand. I said, right there's, and they said, Lloyd Kane. I said, yeah. I said, your grievance just got tore up. And they didn't have, they knew, it was just different, Some guys would push things farther than others, but you just never know.
Did you ever, well, it sounds like if you have time to read the paper, you have time to do the job. Was there any that were just so overworked that you had to get them help immediately, or was that something you were even able to do?
Depending on the supervisor, yes. If they had too much work, I could go to the supervisor and say, look, come here. You can see that this person does not have time to do this, this, and this. I said, let me do it. I said, and I did it many times. I would do the person's job. I would learn that job. And when I was on committee, I would have that person teach me their job. I would physically do their job. And a lot of times, I couldn't do the job either. And there's times that I could do the job, but I also said, there's no way I can do this job 8 hours a day. There's way too much work. I says, you go, I told the supervisor, I said, you do the job. Well, no, they wouldn't do it. I says, well, you write me up for working on the line. I said, I won't write you up for working on the line. But I said, we don't expect to have somebody, we didn't expect to have somebody not to have time to read the paper. Nobody wants to go into that plant and be stuck on that line benched a car, benched a car, benched a car, benched a car. You have to have a little time in there to read a book, read a pamphlet, read something, do something. Have a moment to, at least if somebody stopped by to visit with you, you had time, you know, you needed to have time to visit with them. You couldn't just go and say, well, he's got time to visit, he's got time for more work. That's not the way it worked. You know, it couldn't work that way.
So, did you enjoy being a committee man?
Probably about 99% of the time, yes, I did. There was probably about, there was times that I knew in my mind, this is not right. What you're doing to this person, it is not right. And when they wouldn't back off and you couldn't get anything done no matter what you did, you could write a grievance, you could send a grievance up, you know, go through the process. It didn't matter what you did, you couldn't help the person. And them are the times that I didn't like. I didn't like them times.
Did you ever see any racial or harassment type issues in the plant?
I don't know. I don't think I can say anything racial. I do remember one individual case where the supervisor, I don't want to use the word harass this lady, but it was like anything and everything she did that was not up to par, he pushed her on it, always pushed her on it. And some of it she had coming. Some of it he should have overlooked, but he didn't overlook. And I remember the time that I was, and it just happened to be that this lady was a black lady. And I remember that he took her to the office, and during the interview, she jumped up and punched him.
Ooh.
And I had to pull her off him and take her out of the office. I told her, I said, well, I says, I guarantee you, you know, you're going to be fired. Sign this grievance. And they did fire her. It took me probably about 3-4 months. I got her job back for her. I took quite a bit of harassment over that deal because they told me you should have let her kill him. You know? So, but I, you know, and I did get her job back for her, but she had to go to the other line, which, you know, versus the job, you know, you take what you can get. But I really don't, trying to look back at it, I don't remember any harassment. This one particular case, you know, sticks in my head, but as far as, I would say probably more harassment from individuals versus management versus the individual. I would say more harassment from employee to employee.
Denny, did you ever see anybody hurt in the plant?
Not that I remember. But when I went from committee man to job placement, I worked with a management person. We had an office together. Our job was to find jobs that fit these people's restrictions. And by that I mean if the person got hurt in the plant, let's say that they picked something up and ended up with a back problem. My job as a union rep for the job placement was to make sure that management just didn't say, well, this guy can do it no matter what. My job was to make sure that, in my mind, that I knew the person could do it. What we did was, many times we would videotape the job and take it to a doctor and have the doctor make the decision of whether or not this person could do the job. I worked with two different people, two different ladies, as a matter of fact. One of them was a black lady. Her name is Annie. And to this day, her and I still keep in contact. She was a nurse. So she had the medical background of knowing what the restriction meant. If I had any question about what it meant, I would go out and I would talk to the plant doctor and ask him, just exactly what does this mean? We would also take videotapes to an outside doctor and have him look at this job and say, yes, the person can, and no, the person can't. We learned real quick. There were some people that always played games. We learned real quick. We'd call this one guy in particular called me almost every day. I got to have a job. Get me back in. Well, we finally found a job that fit his restrictions. Called him on the phone and said, we found this job. What's the job? So I told him. Oh, I know that job. 2 hours later, he called me back and said, I can't do that job. I just went to the doctor and got another restriction. So at that point in time, we learned real quick, don't tell them what the job is until we bring them back in. And then let them go from there because, like I say, some people want the job, some people didn't want the job. That job was interesting because you really wanted to get the person that wanted back in, back to work. The only bad part about that job was you had to disrupt somebody who had been on that job. And basically, if this person had the seniority, they would knock this person off that job. You didn't like taking a job away from somebody. But this person had the right to go there because they had the seniority. So therefore, you had to do that. At times, I know I wasn't very well liked because I had to disrupt the person, but out of the hundreds of people that we got back to work, I don't recall anyone complaining after they got taken off that job to me.
Denny, this has been such a great interview, and I kind of want, is there anything that we've not asked you that you would like to share with us?
The only thing that I'd like to say is two things. The one thing I'd like to say is General Motors and the UAW has definitely been good to me. My wife and I went through a bunch of memorabilia stuff that I have collected over the years. Different things that was given to me at certain times for certain things that happened in the plant. One thing I did take, I had a 5-year tie pin. I took the tie pin, and in the plant, there was this guy that would silver solder your tie pin on a ring. And I made the ring out of a piece of stainless steel pipe. And I believe that I took the, in fact, I'm pretty sure I did, because the pin would only take so much heat, and there was a guy in there, and I can't remember what his name is for sure, but he would take and silver solder the pin onto rings, and I wore that ring until I almost wore the wheels off of the ring, and I'm donating that ring to MSU.
Well, thank you very much. Maggie, is there anything that you'd like to say?
No, actually, the only thing I'd like to say is I'm grateful to Fisher Body, General Motors. Not only did they give Denny, I mean, Denny kept his job through them, the benefits that we received through our union have been wonderful. When you raise children, you're going to the doctor, you're going to the dentist, you're going to the eye doctor and stuff. All of those benefits were very, very helpful to us. I'd like to thank them for all the wonderful friends that we've met. With me working at the Union Hall as a replacement secretary, I started when Terry Ward was president, and we have met so many wonderful people who are still involved in our lives through all these years, and we're grateful for that. Right?
Right. Yeah. Right. One thing I'd like to mention, wages. I believe that when I hired in 1963, I was making $2.70. It was either $2.74 or $2.87 an hour when I hired him. I think it was $2.87.
And was that a good wage then?
Yeah, it was a good wage. That was back when gas was only like 20 cents a gallon, and you know, like stuff like that. But yes, it was very good.
Well, thank you both very much.
Thank you both.
Thank you. You're welcome. Thanks for having us.